Welcome, friends. It's time to take flight with the Sega guys, spreading the fire of Sega like a pair of dragons. You've got myself, Dan the Mega Driver, and you've got the Lundy to my edge. It's James the Segaholic. Mate, how are you doing?
I'm very good, mate. Very good. How's yourself?
Good, mate. Good, mate. Been enjoying a bit of Sonic Superstars. Having a blast with that. It's not a masterpiece. It's not up there with the classics, but it's a very solid entry to the Sonic series. Better than Sonic R, better than the classic Sonic sections on Sonic Generations. So, been loving that. I'm trying to finish off a bunch of games as well. I've spent 80 hours in Yakuza 7, and I need to get to the end game of that. I just got past one of the bosses, which I had to grind to get to. Likewise with Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, I'm 95 hours into that, and I've just got to level up enough to fight the last boss. And I'm 60 hours into Grandia on the Saturn. And it's a similar situation there. The end game on these games is killing me. I just want to finish them now. I just want them to be over. You know, first 40, 50 hours, they're great. But now I'm sick of them. just end.
Just finish it off, please. Oh, well, no. No such joy there, mate. I've not been playing much at all, really. I say, apart from trying out Tomb Raider last weekend, unfinished business kind of port, and you done some job getting the Superstars video out as well. That was, whenever you messaged me and WhatsApp and said, I've got a Superstars video ready, I was like, you what? Already?
Yeah, it was literally record footage as much as I can, upload it from the Xbox, upload it to OneDrive, sat down, just recorded 10 minutes of audio. I was conscious that it sounded like me rambling for a bit of it because I didn't have a script or anything. I was like, I don't have time to write a script. I've got to go straight into it.
Just and, go straight into it, mate. That's it.
Yeah. And then, it took a bit of editing. And then, that was it. Fastest I've ever turned one round, I think. Remember, I spent a lot of time doing Yakuza, so I didn't do anything flashy with it. But hope the looks like the response has been pretty warm to it. I think a lot of people are of a pretty similar opinion to me about how it is and where it sits in the pantheon of Sonic classics. But it's good fun. I've been trying to get my family to play it with me. I might get my youngest daughter to play it with me. The others aren't interested.
No, I did notice that the kind of comment section and even stuff on X these days as well has been quite kind of similar, you know, opinion wise. So, it didn't seem as if any kind of early reviews kind of came out either. You know, it seemed to be everybody kind of got their hands on it, maybe through pre-orders arriving a bit early. Apart from mainstream media, I think IGN did their review like 2 days before it came out.
Yeah,
there was no major early kind of reviews of it.
It was weird because I think there's a few outlets that breached the street date in the US, so quite a few people got their copy really early. Some got it a week early, which is crazy. But I don't think there was many review copies that were flying about too early. I mean, it's a solid game. Unfortunately, it's launched within 4 days of Spider-Man 2. Within a week of the new Super Mario game, which is getting rave reviews. It's just a shame that it was by RZS and it's not a true Sonic team, or, you know, even the Christian Whitehead backed. That could have been great as well, but it's solid enough. But mate, today it's not about Sonic or Yakuza, it's about a Sega franchise which is, I suppose, almost forgotten. Did get a little bit of a resurrection. God, how long ago was that now? It must have been a couple of years.
Well, a good couple of years now for the remake. I mean, there was rumours of the sequel's remake, which have kind of vanished into thin air as well. We were expecting to see that at some point, and that's not occurred.
Yeah.
So, we are revisiting the wonderful Panzer Dragoon series.
That's right. If the footage on the monitor, if viewers can see it, didn't give it away.
He's by running.
So yeah, this was one that threw into the mixer late today. I fancy talking about Panzer Dragoon, so it was just to talk about the legacy it leaves, what we love about it, and basically what makes this series so special. Mm-hmm. We were saying we won't go into a full retrospective of it, because this is, we know, since we've made the move to video now, we do have dedicated retrospectives where we can go into. So this would just be, you know, just a good old-fashioned Sega guys discussion around what makes this series great, our personal experiences and why it's so special to us. But I suppose a bit of brief history would probably help, though. I mean, for anyone that's not familiar with the series, what is Panzer Dragoon? It's a rail shooter, which, mate, do they even make them these days?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the kind of earliest influence you could maybe say Panzer Dragoon has is maybe something like Star Fox.
Yeah.
You know, very similar third-person view on rails, enemies coming towards you, lock-on targets, etc. But, you know, Panzer Dragoon took that formula and just expanded on it. The sheer scale of the world you were in, even though you were on rails, there was just so much going on around about you. But at the same time, it felt quite kind of desolate, isolated, apocalyptic.
Yeah.
So, I don't see anything like that. Everything's all now. You've got the open world, and now you can go wherever you want. You know, there's no limit to where you can go.
Yeah.
Whereas Panzer Dragoon led you down a set path, but it didn't detract from the experience at all. You know, you still felt very much in control. There was an element of movement side to side. Obviously, you're kind of up and down your X, Y axis. You could, you know, control the dragon that way. But what, you know, Panzer Dragoon did bring in that was amazing was the shoulder button, the rotation, a 360 movement. Yeah. So you could also have your radar in the top corner, and, you know, enemies were shown on there. You had to swivel around, and you could choose to fire your manual weapon or your, you know, your weapon from the dragon itself. So it definitely expanded on that whole kind of Star Fox model. But it's just a series, as you said, mate, that seems to have, it had its small resurrection and then has vanished again.
Yeah, so the expectation is still that the team that brought back who did the first remake, and they also did House of the Dead, are meant to be working on a remake of Spy. But yeah, so yeah, Spartan mate. I mean, there aren't many rail shooters around today. I mean, Star Fox Zero was what, 8-9 years ago now. There's not many games of this type at all. But for anyone that hasn't ever played a rail shooter, it basically is just you or avatar, usually a spaceship or a plane. In this case, a dragon. In Space Harrier's case, a guy on a jetpack with a cannon under his arm. But, you know, zooming forward, was blasting away at everything in front of you. There's not much to it, but immensely fun. Just pure old-school arcade action. And as you say, mate, Panzer Dragoon expanding on that by letting you rotate the camera all 360 degrees around you, which is what made it special. Now, originally, this was developed by Team Andromeda, by Yukio Futasugi. What makes me laugh about this, mate, is he was doing what he calls menial jobs in Sega. I don't know what menial means. Maybe admin tasks. I can't imagine that he was, you know, cleaning the toilets or anything like that.
No.
But I imagine he was just doing, you know, bits and bobs around, like an intern sort of thing. And he pitched this idea to Sega, and they went, right, yep, here you go, here's a team of 15.
Could have been that menial a job if they gave him a team of 15 people.
I know. Actually. So yeah, he was given this team of 15, which became Team Andromeda in 1994, started work. It was one of the things I think we saw the earliest screenshots for in some of the magazines. Didn't have a name back then. It was just called like Dragon Game or something like that. You saw the earliest I saw of it was stills amongst a lot of Saturn and 32X rumors. Right. And at the time, I don't think I knew whether it was. There was nothing about it at all that I really knew. It was just, this is an image of something that's coming. Apparently, the initial idea was to use vehicles, but early on, it moved to dragons, which. I can see
quite a shift into that. How do you get from cars and trucks, dragons? Glad he made that decision, because, I mean, there's something quite cool about dragons.
Yeah, I mean, his words were, "Who doesn't want to ride a dragon?"
There you go. That's right.
Yeah, but then he started working on the lore and developing the worlds. I think one of his influences was Dune, and there was a few others, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's the influence was Arzak, which was a series by the French artist Jean Giraud, or Giraud, how you pronounce it, but he goes by the alias of Mobius. So, you know, that was the influence on the kind of artistic style. And Mobius would then go on to do the cover for the Japanese version of the game, which is absolutely gorgeous. Like, you know, on this show we've spoken, like, I think American Saturn box art is just not great. Like, I just think the choices...
That's very polite.
I'm trying not to... I don't want to offend Dave and Pat, that's the thing, you know, it's like... But it's shite. It's just, I can't even stop myself from saying it. But it's some really, really poor choices, whereas I think the PAL cases, and this is the same across all Sega systems, we tended to mirror the Japanese choices. Well, the one I always cite is like Crazy Taxi. Like, Crazy Taxi's American cover on Dreamcast is awful. Like, yeah. But it's just this really bad artistic impression of Axel front on in the cab with people flying out, whereas the Japanese and PAL covers are just a really nice plain yellow with the logo, and it's so simple, but it just works.
Yeah.
And the PAL case for Panzer Dragoon is just, you know, gorgeous 3D render of, you know, lead character on the dragon with his gun out. But the Japanese one, my God, it's so nice. It's so detailed and just so artistic, kind of almost like inspired by Mobius's, you know, actual drawing work himself. So, aye, it'd be nice if we got a version of that, because it's absolutely glorious.
It's gorgeous, yeah. I'll need a big pick of it for me wall, actually. This is one of the best pieces of art for any game, I think. Yeah, the PAL version's got the kind of the game render, isn't it? It's obviously the CG models that are used in the cutscenes in the game.
Yep.
Whereas the American one, the US one, is, it just seems to be something custom. And the thing that strikes me is the light coming out of the dragon's mouth, and because it's obviously done in a rush, there's just no light anywhere else. So it's like, it just really looks off. It's just, yeah. Yeah, American.
But the Digital Foundry here, didn't we?
Like, yeah, I know, going into the box art.
light sourcing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, I mean, that's the thing that strikes me, is I look at it and it's like, well, if the light's there, there's no light anywhere else. And it just looks poor. And we won't go into any other box art, because the Guardian Heroes one is the one that always gets me, the US box art with the really weird picture of the Golden Warrior. It's just like, what were they thinking? But but anyway, Panzer Dragoon, it was a launch game in the US for the Saturn.
Yep.
Came out a couple of months after launch in the UK. Obviously in Japan, the Saturn had been out since Christmas, and Panzer Dragoon came out July time. Was a success, well regarded on release. Sold fairly well, and as such, a couple of sequels with the greenlit. And they said, all right, so first of all, you're going to make a sequel, but secondly, you need to make an RPG to combat Final Fantasy VII, which is no small task.
No pressure at all. But I mean, yeah, game went down well, reviewed well. It was definitely I think one of the terms that you used whenever we touched on Panzer Dragoon previously on the show was that it was probably the first real technical showpiece for the system. You know, although as good as Virtua Fighter was, Sega put a lot of stock on the impact of Virtua Fighter, and I've said before that I really think Panzer Dragoon should have been, if they were going to be hell-bent on doing a pack-in game, then I think to show what you were getting out of the box, I think retrospectively looking back, I think Panzer Dragoon would have been a far better choice. Because it really does just show a lot of, you know, promise in terms of the texture mapped, fluid animation. Okay, it's on rails, but great combat, that 360 movement, that brought a lot of things that, you know, hadn't been seen, you know, in console gaming wise. But that's a, you know, we know what Sega's like when it comes to decision making, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Virtua Fighter made sense in Japan, where it was a phenomenon. I think by the time this airs, we'd have had our Virtua Fighter retrospective out, and Virtua Fighter wasn't a worldwide phenomenon worldwide. So the impact wasn't as big bundling it with the set. I mean, for me, Virtua Fighter was the biggest game there was, but you know, for the casual player, I think Panzer Dragoon would have been a great back in a demonstration. You know, put that up against the likes of Ridge Racer, etc. Instead of and then people can go out and buy Daytona USA and Virtua Fighter, which Daytona USA, as we saw from the leaked Sega documents from 96, was a massive seller for the Saturn. So, maybe more people picking up Virtua Fighter instead, or maybe do different bundles. But who knows, mate? Hindsight's 2020. I'm sure with the discussion we'll get into another sort of day of what they could have done. But just thinking back to our own personal experiences about the games now. So, where did you first see Panzer Dragoon in motion?
You put this to me earlier, and I had a right good think about it. So I remember there's a very small clip of footage in the Saturn launch advert with Valkyrie. But if I'm going to sit here and be honest, I'm not going to say that I initially seen it and went, oh, that's Panzer Dragoon. Because at that point in time, you'd no idea what that was. It was just a case. It was an advert that came out when it launched. I seen it once on a weekend, and I never seen it again. So, for me, the first time I seen Panzer Dragoon would have been when I got my hands on it, and that was, again, my uncle came back from work. I was up there at the weekend, and he just dropped it on the couch and went, "Oh, I picked this up." I'm like, "All right, okay, cool." Put it in and just, and that would have been round about the time it came out. It was pretty close, I would imagine, because that's just the kind of shit he did, man, was just buying new stuff. So it would have been, if not that kind of launch week, but pretty close after. I'm not going to sit here and try and nail down a date. It would have been pretty close to when it came out. It was mind-blowing to see something like that back then. In 95, because it was 7 weeks between it coming out, obviously it launched with the American system. Why it took 7 weeks to bring it out in the PAL region, I don't know why, but that was kind of late mid-August that we got it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty well PAL optimized. So maybe that was it.
It was stunning to see it in motion. That with yourself, that title screen. The camera flying over the desert. The little bits of foliage and the dunes in the desert pop in as this camera goes over it. But it's just that trumpet kind of orchestral music that plays as the camera pans and the shadow of the dragon flies over and then the logo appears. Oh, poetry, mate. Absolutely amazing. So I would say that apart from the initial footage on the Valkyrie advert, but I kind of try and claim that as the first time I remember seeing it. I know it's in there because I know what the Valkyrie adverts got in it. But at that time, I never sat there and went, oh, there's Panzer Dragoon. I know that game. So it would have been whenever I got my hands on an actual copy of it and played it. What about yourself?
So for me, and I was trying to solve this mystery before we hit the record button. So I have a very vivid memory of the first time that I saw it. It was actually on a gaming channel, or not a gaming channel, a gaming show. It must have been a terrestrial UK channel. This was before Channel 5, so it was either BBC One, ITV, or Channel 4. It would have been 1995. Now, I thought it was Cybernet. Cybernet started airing in 1995. But looking at Lucy Longhurst doing the narration for it.
Dr. Lucy Longhurst.
Now. Yes.
She's a psychologist now.
That's right. I used to love that show. Used to watch it on ITV, and then when it moved over to, I think it moved over to what was the Children's Channel on cable and Sky. Used to watch it on there. But my earliest memory of Panzer Dragoon, aside from, I remember seeing the images in the magazines, but I had no frame of reference. So I didn't put two and two. I didn't realize they were the same thing until many years later. But the first time I actually saw it was they're saying, oh, this is what the next generation is all about. This game looks amazing. You can cycle around. And they were explaining what the game was about. And I was, wow, this looks incredible. And straight away, I was mind blown. And I've said before, at the time, the Saturn to me was something that I wanted, but just thought, you know, this is a £300-400 console. I'm never going to own one. I'm going to keep saving for a 32X. But just made this kind of impossible dream of owning what I thought was the greatest games console in the world. You know, not only does it have Virtua Fighter and Daytona USA, but it has this thing as well. I need to get one. So, yeah, that was the first time I saw it in motion, was on whether it was Cybernet, whether it was Bad Influence. I don't think it was, but whatever it was, I saw it on ITV, because I know it was a terrestrial channel.
Maybe that was movies, games, and videos.
Possibly.
Remember that?
I do remember that. What time was that on during?
That was like a Saturday morning, late morning.
Oh no, this would have been a weekday.
Was it?
Yeah, it was when my mum used to work in the doctor's surgery, in the afternoons, and after school we'd go to my nan's house and we'd watch. That's where my dad had got Sky, and I think we had cable at the time in our house, but my dad just had terrestrial. But then we just got into things like, you know, Biker Grove. We were hooked on Biker Grove at one point.
Biker Grove.
Exactly. So it was definitely, it's definitely either bad, if it wasn't Games Master, it was definitely either Bad Influence or it was Cybernet or something else. But yeah, that was where I first saw it. And then the next time I saw it was kind of when, because this must have been pre-launch, because it was kind of a news article to say this is the new game. And then the next time I saw it was after launch, and as I said before, I walked into what was Electronics Boutique at the time in Watford, and I was like, oh my god, the Saturn's there. When did that come out over in the UK? And they had it on the TV, playing. TV was attached to the ceiling, and I was just looking up in absolute awe at it. But yeah, that was the first, it left a hell of an impression. Yeah, sadly I didn't actually get to play it until a lot later. But so I suppose the next question really was, when did you first get to play it? For a viewer, it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? Because you first got to play it when your uncle brought it home. And
yeah. I mean, the thing is as well, I still remember the kind of retail kind of slight bias against it as well, because I think I've mentioned this before, but there's a shop called Game Zone in Partick, and Stewie, you'll know Game Zone, mate, you're as old as me, you'll remember it, you know Partick, mate, I know Stewie will be watching or listening, and there was a guy in there, and he was very, most of the staff were very pro PlayStation, but I always remember someone went in and they had Panzer Dragoon running on a wee CRT on the left-hand side of the shop as you walked in, and people inquired about it. I always remember this guy with his big, stupid, padded shoulder jacket. He's asking people, that's Panzer Dragoon on the Saturn, but it's not that great. Not that great? I was like, would you like to see Ridge Racer instead? And you're like, oh, come on, man. It's like, just people were being drawn to it whenever they had it. Obviously, they'd got it and it was new, they'd put it on, but they were still dissuading people from it, you know, yeah. Obviously in awe of the PlayStation at the time, but it definitely turned heads. So, as I said, playing it for the first time, it just, the sheer scale of it is what kind of grabbed you. As I said, it's got that kind of very desolate, post-apocalyptic, you against the world kind of outlook. But you've got this kind of feeling of, even from the start, you feel powerful.
Yep.
Like, you know, it's not as if like you need to, like, obviously in Zvi, and we'll come and touch on Zvi, your dragon evolves. Even in Saga, you later on you can morph your dragon into different battle formations and stats, but Panzer Dragoon 1, you're just literally the dragon is as it is. But you straight away, you know, swoop down for the sky across the water, the runes sticking out for the water. Those, I think they look like big geese. You know what I'm talking about? They look like geese, and they squeak when you shoot.
Yeah,
you shoot them.
I could hear when you first said the big geese. I could hear them getting shot.
and you know yourself, you've got the, you know, wee red, you know, weird enemies that are kind of hanging from the kind of big archways, and you can target six of them at once to just blown them away, and they drop into the water, and it splashes, and it's just so much going on. It just made such an impression.
Yeah.
No, it really did. And the thing that always, that I, you know, on reflection, it's one of the very earliest games that kind of merged a true cinematic presentation and set pieces with traditional gameplay. You had like glimpses of it in the past. You had things like Flashback, where you had that intro that was like rotoscopes, and obviously the animation was rotoscopes, but obviously there was no, it was very light on that, like sound effects, etc. You had stuff, you know, you had Night Trap and things like that, which were FMV, or you'd have FMV intros, but the way that Panzer Dragoon was so, the narrative was so interwoven with the rest of the game in the cutscenes and everything else, it feels like it's kind of the template for kind of where we are now, because I can't think of a game that was doing what Panzer Dragoon did. You had RPGs, you had your Final Fantasies, etc., with your speech bubbles, etc. Obviously, the latest was Final Fantasy VI or Chrono Trigger back then. But they were obviously 2D. They weren't swooping cinematic set pieces. It really does feel like this, it, you know, that's the earliest example of the sort of things we see today with our, you know, with what Sony are huge on, with the big, you know, movie-like experiences. And it's, yeah, it feels like the template for that, almost. It laid a lot of the groundwork, I think.
I mean, look, you see, even if you think back to the PlayStation 1 era, what was the one thing, apart from having arguably a lot of the kind of the biggest franchises at that time, but the one thing that games were always known for was those bloody intros.
Yeah.
Like, every game had, especially your Namco games, like, think of like Soul Edge's intro, Tekken 2, Tekken 3's intro, you know, they've even Ridge Racer Type 4, Rage Racer, they've all got these CG intros. It was something that made the PlayStation. Yeah. It was a hallmark of the PlayStation at that time. But Panzer Dragoon did that first, and that opening cinematic is, again, it sets the tone for the scale, because, you know, the little three riders going along the canyon, quite minding their business, and then, you know, the kind of animal goes through the sand and then bursts out, and one of them falls off, and, you know, then they're kind of chasing that, and they look up, and then the kind of blimp comes overhead and casts the shadow, and obviously you see what happens, the dragon swoops down, and they get the explosion, they get taken away, and then the rider gets killed and passes on all his knowledge.
Yeah.
Which is just, and everything about that, and if you look at it now, it's a bit kind of pixely and bloody, but at the time, setting the scene the way it did, oh, so good.
And it really was.
The music that goes with it as well is just, you know yourself, you can hear it. It's just, oh, amazing.
It really was. And yeah, I do. And oh God, the amount of times that we're like, when we first got Saturns and PlayStations, like me and my friends back in like 96, 97, you know, the amount of times we'd stick a disc in and go, hang on, we got to watch the intro before we get started. And then Namco did it a lot, but it didn't have one in the original Tekken. I mean, they were present in stuff like Mega CD games and stuff. And, you know, even back to Sonic CD, that did it. But for Panzer Dragoon, I just feel it's so interwoven into the rest of the game. It's all consistent, isn't it? Like, here's an FMV intro and here's a game that looks nothing like it.
Aye.
You know, obviously the renders in the intro for Panzer Dragoon are a lot more, are extremely higher quality compared to what the 3D in the game, but the models are recognizable, you know, the blimp, as you say.
Aye.
It's all consistent with the game, and it just helps immerse the player in that world and in that setting, in a, like a game like no other. And it's basically just a roller coaster ride, isn't it? It just takes you from, you know, as you're flying through. It's tough. It's not an easy ride, but
it's also a game that likes to kind of toy with you a wee bit, because if you played it on easy, it would only let you get as far as stage 3,
yeah,
stage 3 or stage 4. And then once you finish, it's stage 4, because I think it lets you get as far as stage 4, which is the one you go, which again is phenomenal visually, looking through all those kind of brown and gold kind of tunnels and dropping down. And you finish that, and you know yourself, if you hit a certain amount of hit completion. You know, your percentage is high, you get extra credits.
Yeah.
So, like, if you finish your first three levels and you've got really high percentage of hitting enemies with hardly any missed, you've got some credits. It's like, Eddie Murphy, get some credits, fucking now. Got some credits. It's like, right, and then it goes, thank you for playing. Please try on a harder difficulty. Yeah. You're like, bastard. It's like, you've done all that work, and then whenever you put it onto normal, that the step up is noticeable.
Yeah.
You know, enemies, they're far quicker to fire, they're more accurate. The game doesn't fire extra lives at you, you know, for completion. You need to earn your extra credits. It's tough.
That fifth stage still always brings me close to the... If I don't always beat it, and if I do, I do it with a sliver of health. I find the stage after it easier, like the final stages. But that one is a massive pain. But yeah,
pain, mate. Yep, I agree with that.
But yeah, I mean, we'll get on to why we feel these games are so special. But yeah, I didn't actually play the original game until it must be about 2000. Because the Dreamcast was dead by then. By the time I finally picked up a copy of the game for me to play myself. So my first experience with Panzer Dragoon was actually Panzer Dragoon Zwei.
Right.
And I'd seen it, obviously I was picking up magazines at the time, I was picking up what was Sega magazine before it got the rebrand. I was picking up Mean Machine Sega, stuff like that, CMVG, and I knew that Panzer Dragoon Zwei was going to be brilliant. But when I got my Sega Saturn with Daytona, Sega Rally and Virtua Fighter 2, what came with the Sega Flash Volume 1 disc.
That's right, yeah.
Obviously, we talked about demo discs before on the on our demo disc podcast, but yeah, I played the Panzer Dragoon demo, which is the forest stage.
That's right, yeah, stage 3.
Yeah, and everything that hit me about that was just, it was love at first sight. The music, the sounds, the gameplay, the multiple routes, the way it tops up everything at the end, the massive boss. You know, the boss is phenomenal in that, you know, and it's jumping around, swinging from the trees, launching its tail at you, and then like screeching. It's got like a alien xenomorph head, hasn't it? It's
that's right, aye. Very, very similar in shape.
It's, but it was phenomenal, and that was just like, I wanted Virtua Fighter 2, I wanted Daytona USA, and I wanted Nights into Dreams, and then it was just like, I need to get Panzer Dragoon Zwei. And then I picked it up as soon as I had the money after, I think.
Aye, that Sega Flash demo, really, and again, it just upped to kind of the visual standard as well, you know, in terms of detail, you know, 60 FPS as well. Just the kind of VDP2 flexed its muscles big time. Was like, some of the set pieces in that game are just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I finally got it, I think I was initially, because I knew that in Panzer Dragoon 1 you start straight off, you know, like you go straight in, and everyone knows Flight, you know, the song Flight, as you come in, you're straight in, as you say, you feel powerful, gun down those enemies. In Panzer Dragoon 2, you have that whole narrative with Lundy, and he, you know, he finds the mutant Coolia, you know, they're cursed. I meant to kill him, but I couldn't kill him because little Largy, he had wings.
Have you seen the cutscene at the start? He kind of gets back to his wee hut and opens the door, and it's just sitting there looking at him like a Labrador puppy.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. It's brilliant. It's so well done, that scene. She instantly just, you get that connection with the two of them, and then he comes, he's trying it, he's like, I'll make you fly today, trying to get it to fly. And then I was initially disappointed because, you know, after playing the demo, after seeing the first game, not actually getting to play it, but seeing the first game, playing the demo, just wanted to fly around and blast the crap out of everything. But first stage, you start off on the back while it's stomping around, and they're just blowing your little village to smithereens. And I got it, and I was just like, oh, I want it to fly. But then obviously that leads up to that amazing set piece in stage 2, where you know, where you're making your way through that desert just after escaping from the Empire or whoever it was that's blown up your village. And then he jumps off the ledge and then he starts gliding down and flying. It's just there's some games, there's moments in gaming that are just simply magical, and that's absolutely one of them.
And the thing is, well, see, what always struck me about the first stage as well, you know, you're right in that the first game makes you feel powerful from the off, and it does make you feel that this is an infant dragon, but
yeah,
you know, the hills and the mountains either side are just so vast, and always got like War of the Worlds vibes, because like the big kind of blimp style enemies just loom over.
Yeah.
You know, they start to appear overhead. It's almost like they'll say, like, War of the Worlds, the tripods standing up. That just reminds me of that. Just these massive enemies that you've got no right to even think about taking on, just appearing on the horizon. But I know what you mean. As it progresses, it just every stage just ups the ante. You know, every part of it just gets better and better. I mean, the third stage we spoke about, obviously the forest stage, but the fourth level is very reminiscent of the fourth level in the first game. Very similar.
Yeah.
But what are the water effects like in that?
I know, they're absolutely phenomenal. It's just, especially since they're translucent as well.
Aye.
You see that big, the boss is really odd. It's like a giant chicken. But with a massive barbed tail, and it keeps doing these somersaults at you, and the music's all like a choir in the back. It's like, and but yeah, it dips underwater, and I was just, it's transparent. It's transparent.
They said it could do transparencies.
Yes, I mean, yeah, it's the game that is done. It's done transparency since day one. The lasers are transparent, and in the second game, you get the transparent water effects. Oh. On the snow stage that's on your screen now, you've got like some transparent effects on the icebergs. It's you know, Survivor did so much right. And yeah, you know, after I think the original Panzer Dragoon, you know, John Linneman, I think he said that the original run runs around 20 frames per second, but the Survivor locks it at 30. And it's just an absolutely flawless 30 frames per second presentation. It's just, I mean, for me, it's the greatest rail shooter ever made. And it's just, you know, an absolute masterpiece. What is it the disc says in the Japanese one? One of the finest shooters ever made, brought to your, I can't remember what it is now.
I mean, either.
Yeah.
Is it 30? I thought it ran at 60.
No, it's 30.
It must be a lot, because it feels so fluid.
It does, yeah.
Oh, it's just gorgeous. I mean, that snow stage that you mentioned again there, the water beneath you is just so murky but translucent. There's so much going on. The explosions, the enemies, the colours, your lasers, the snow effects are just constantly coming at the screen. I mean, I think there's a reason why it was Vi that they used in the Sega of America adverts. Yeah. I'm sorry, PlayStation. This is what's possible when you have 8 processors. but his Vi stands up to anything on PS1. Anything.
Yeah.
Without doubt.
It stands alongside, in my opinion, it stands alongside Virtua Fighter 2 as the most visually impressive game of that period. And yeah, it stands up to anything on PlayStation or N64. You know, Star Fox came after Star Fox 64. It's the year after, it was 97 Star Fox, which I love Star Fox 64. It's one of my favorite games, and it's my favorite game on the N64, but still, for me, it doesn't hold a candle to Panzer Dragoon's Vi. And graphically, although it's a bit more going on, it's still quite low resolution compared to Vi. It's a lot blurrier. It's like some smeared Vaseline all over it. great game, but Zvi takes the crown for me. But did you first play Zvi via that demo as well?
Yeah, I Sega Flash. It was on volume 1 and 2.
Oh, was it on 1 as well?
It was on 1 and 2. Yeah, same level. But again, I didn't ever own Zvi. Sam had Zvi, so that's how I got to play. He would bring it up to mine, and I would play it at his. So that was one that I never actually owned. So you and I have got very contrasting. Again, I picked up Zvi. My first copy I owned of Zvi was a Japanese one, and that's after I'd got Dreamcast on import, and then kind of opened my eyes to the import scene. So I went, I'm going to go back and do the Saturn import stuff. So my first copy of Zwei was actually a Japanese one, but it was way after the fact. My only experience of playing Zwei on the Saturn at the time it came out. Just look at that level that's running just now, man. Jesus.
The ship level blew my mind. That sixth episode, just the scale of it, and it's that was the mind blowing thing about it. You're on this dragon. Dragons, you know, the perception is they're huge, powerful creatures, and your rider on there is just this tiny little bloke on this giant dragon. But when the dragons, you know, jumping in and fighting these armies and these monsters and everything, and they're absolutely huge, and that ship, the Shellcoof, it's called. It's just gargantuan. The draw distance seems to go on forever, and the frame rate doesn't skip a beat. And you've got all these other things all attacking you, swooping in, lasers going everywhere, fire going off. Then you go into the tunnels and you pop out the other side of the ship, and then you blow down the wings and you go through it again, pop up underneath. It's absolutely unreal, and it's just there's nothing else like it that generation, I don't think.
No, I mean, in C as well, you're talking about kind of draw distance as well. It's the second stage where you're kind of above the clouds. So that's after you drop down and start flying, but you're above the clouds, but also the mountain tops are kind of peeking through. But it's got this, obviously you've got the draw distance there. So you've got the kind of horizon, the kind of sun setting in the distance. You've also got this beautiful kind of smog, kind of like wispy cloud effect around the base of the mountain peaks that are, you know.
Yeah.
And you do feel as if you're soaring up, you know, at great, great heights. It just, again, VDP2 just coming into its own there, just that horizon is just, the draw distance is insane.
Yeah.
You know, just, but that part of the second level just, there's just so many set pieces in Zwei that just make you go,
yeah.
And I think even today, I think you'd need to be a real stingy bastard to not at least appreciate Zwei if you've seen it today.
Yeah.
You know, even if you've never played it before, if somebody went, look, this is a game from what, was it 96?
96 it was, mid-96.
So, you know, this is 96 on a Saturn. Would you make of that? It would have to impress, because it all blows my mind to this day.
Yeah. No, mine as well. But yeah, so after Zwei, I was just fully in love, fully on board with Panzer Dragoon. For some reason, didn't get the first one. I think I was, I don't think I had enough pocket money. There were so many Saturn games that I wanted at the time. I think Alpha 2 was next on my list to get. And then we went from there. But obviously, the next game took my eye was Panzer Dragoon Saga. And that was one that I was following since it got announced in Saturn Power. It was the first time I saw it, and was just following the development of it over the months in both Saturn Power and Sega Saturn Magazine. And of course, Sega Saturn Magazine, Rich Ledbetter with that massive coup in getting the demo disc, which was just the entirety of this one.
Aye. That's just, you know, people, as I said before on here talking about Saga, people call it a demo disc. The only relation it has to a demo disc is that it was free on the front cover of a magazine. It's the full retail disc. If you bought the retail copy, your save carried over. It was the exact same disc. It came in the box. Insane. And what a game. I was the same as you. I was following this one, like Sega Saturn Magazine doing, you know, multiple previews, multi-page spreads on it. And, I know Sega Lord X isn't a massive fan of Saga. I think the problem that Saga has is that I think a bit of its impact is lost because of its rarity. I think there's two distinct, maybe even three distinct camps. There's the people who had Saga when it came out. There's people who have got it, who are fans of the Saturn and Panzer Dragoon as a whole, and have managed to get it later on and just love it for what it is. And then you've got the third, which is people who I think have got it because of its rarity. I think it's got that allure about it. And perhaps in a way, to some people, its rarity and its price can maybe be a hindrance, because it might not live up to, people go, this is a 700 quid game, and they put it on and it might not feel to them like a 700 pound game. They're playing it expecting something that they're not going to get. Whereas I think for us, we look back at it, like, you've got the story of falling off the bike, smashing the disc, my God, you know, having to source another copy, you know. And also myself, I literally within 45 minutes of playing that first disc, I was on gameplay.com. I was, didn't think it was .com, but was it .com? It was just gameplay.
Hello, I'd like to order a game, please.
Did that code you have to, you know,
yeah,
you
I give them the
your,
code.
You give them your card details, it would, you know, take money whenever the it was always shipped, and you always got it a day early. Gameplay always delivered a day early. But I just think the for those of us who got to experience it, yeah, the demo or the disc on the cover of Sega Saturn magazine, got to pick it up and just, oh, again, the music in these games, like, Behold the Precious Wings on the title screen, even the intro for Saga, you know, I don't know what the track for the intro isn't on the bloody soundtrack on Spotify. See if you want to hear the song that's in the intro.
The Azel theme.
It's a
yeah. It's the but
I can't find that in a Spotify playlist.
It's the Azel theme, isn't it? Or is it slightly different? Because I think that's under.
Because of the chorus part, the do 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 do.
Yeah, that's all in the. So it's probably called the Azel boss fight or something like that.
Aye. So is that part of it? You see that the kind of. The drums at the start. Yeah. I just want that actual edit, that bit for the intro. it's so good.
It is on there, but yeah, it's fantastic, mate. And yeah, I do think I do find some of the criticism of it a bit odd. So I know that there's a section of Saturn fans who, you know, they are people that grew up with the Saturn or that had the Saturn from day one and were keeping an eye on Saga like we were. Loved the original two games, like, you know, like we did, or, you know, but I think they were expecting another rail shooter and were disappointed that it wasn't, and I think that's one of the frequent complaints. But I don't see the issue with it so much. You know, Sonic the Hedgehog has been on whatever, Mario has been on every sort of game known to man, you know, he's in fighting games, racing games, board games. You know, don't get anyone saying, oh, why is Mario in a board game? So I've never really understood that criticism. You know, it's not uncommon for games to kind of branch out and do something different. You know, it's kind of expected. You know, Sonic had a branded a Puyo Puyo game, you know, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Beam Machine.
Yep.
We'd had Sega Sonic Arcade, or at least seen it and played it. I'd played it by this point, and that was the isometric game. It was nothing like the 2D games. It was, you know, it's not even a platform game. It's an action game.
Spinball, mate.
Sonic Spinball. I'm not getting into it right now, but not a fan of it. But I didn't begrudge it existing. I just begrudged it because it was shit.
Moving on.
But yeah, I didn't understand. I don't understand the criticism of it. I don't know if there's a view that because of, you know, the trials and the tribulations that Team Andromeda went through with that, obviously they were well overworked. A team of about 25 or 30 people. It wasn't a big team that delivered this game. Working silly long hours. A couple of team members actually died during its production, which is absolutely tragic. If they just made another rail shooter, would that have all come to pass? I don't know, but yeah, it's an odd one, mate. But, you know, because the game itself, I think, is, again, it's one of the best RPGs of its generation. You know, it stands. It's short, but then,
and like, I like that about it.
I like it about it. That's why I play it almost every year. But someone was showing something on Twitter recently saying, bring back the short JRPG, because Dragon Quest on the NES, you know, obviously Dragon Quest is a massive long running series. You could beat that in 8 hours. So 20 hours for this is, you know, it's fantastic. And I know, you know, if you've got disc one of Final Fantasy VII, with an official PlayStation magazine, that probably would have done you 20 hours, because that takes you all the way up to that takes you all the way up until Ares dying, doesn't it? Maybe even beyond that.
Aye. There's somebody shouting spoiler alert or something like this for that one, probably.
God, if you don't know that Ares dies in Final Fantasy VII, Jesus Christ.
Oh, right, that just made me a total tangent there, right? Hold on a minute. So, I was in work, this is before lockdown, right? And I was talking to somebody about 24, right? 24, Eva Sutherland. And I happened to mention, we're talking about moments in 24 that shocked you. And I said, straight away, David Palmer being killed, right? Some guy two desks away stands up and goes, spoilers. They had just started watching it now. 24, how this is like 18 years later or something like that. I'm like, come on, mate, the spoiler window has passed. So aye, if you don't know that Hades dies in Final Fantasy VII, you've been living under a rock.
Yeah, they're going to change it in the remake as well anyway. What is it? Is it Rebirth, the next one? The next, they split it into parts, haven't they? So yeah, there's everyone suspects that she's going to live a little bit longer in than this one. So, you know, no spoilers if you're planning to just play the remakes. But yeah, it's a short game by RPG standards, but it's just so good. And you can just play it over and over, you know, chasing those excellent ranks for all the combat. Uh-huh. And the combat is, you know, I think for my money, it's the best battle system ever made. It's just because there's so much action for it. It's not you're not sitting there waiting for stuff to fill up. Constantly moving.
Aye, exactly. You're still in control of the dragon, of your character. You're still in control of them during the battle. And it's such a brilliant, brilliant battle mechanic. You know yourself, if you've played it, you've got the kind of radar in the middle, red and green areas. So, you know, if you're in green, you're safe. The enemy can't hit you. But if you want to hit the enemy, you need to. It's risk versus reward. You need to time when you're going to go out into the red area. And obviously, the weak point is there for you to hit. If you can unleash either your hand weapon, your lasers, you've got like your. Was it the.
The Berserk?
The Berserk. You get the kind of chain lasers as well.
Yeah.
You can fire them. There's a big kind of disc ones as well that you can fire. So many different kind of special weapons you've got, but if you stay out there too long, the enemy can hit you. So, you know, you've got to kind of time when to kind of peek in and out. But, you know, if you're in the green area, then the enemy can't hit you, but they've got that's a safe spot for them. They've got like, there's one that you come across, that kind of formation of these, I just say, look like flying bugs. You know yourself, they're kind of green and red, but you go behind them and they fire up like a shield.
Yeah.
And you can fire them and they do a wee bit of damage, but not enough. So you've got to swoop round, you know, and take them out. But the battle system is so good. It does kind of still have that slight element of on rails, even in the exploration areas, because, you know yourself, whenever you get to the kind of canyons, you're kind of going down, you can, you know, burst open the kind of wee grey triangular style. And they pop out like your health or the elixir, or you call it, things that they pop out, map parts, there's wee bits to save as well, and you've got the little kind of mines so you can lock onto them and fire and choose which mine to go down. So it's people that are saying, you know, it steps away too far from the kind of formula. It still has on rail elements to it, but at the same time, there is more open world sections. Like whenever you go and try and get the ship parts later on, you go to that kind of big open kind of area and you've got to fly around, and you do end up getting involved in battles, but they're not as random and annoying as Final Fantasy VII when you walk 2 inches on the map and it's you sit there waiting, standing there like an idiot. You've got a giant, this is always annoying, you've got a giant sword and you stand there and let somebody hit you. It's like, what the hell's that? I've never ever got on with Final Fantasy at all. I just can't go that whole, like, it just doesn't make sense. You've got the biggest sword in the world, man. There's people
All right, mate, just hit us on the chin.
Oh, I love
Matt Final on next.
I do like Final Fantasy. I mean, I've gone into a rant before because I think it's, I still think it's overrated, but I've got a lot of fondness for it. A lot of nostalgia. But yeah. See, I don't like the new remake where they make it all they've made it basically like Devil May Cry.
Aye. And they've went the complete other way.
Yeah.
You know, it's mad. It's like total free form. As you say, I like Devil May Cry, smack him up there and then.
Yeah.
Like, no. And our Panzer Dragoon Saga's battle mechanics are amazing. You get the dragon morphing system as well. Yeah. You know, just select whether you want to be defensive, offensive, more kind of magic based. Or just so good.
It's the way that the dragon changes as well. Again, there's nothing else quite like it out there. You know,
can you hear it in your head?
Yeah, I can hear it. Rawr. You see them like the tail expanding and actually, and the wings getting bigger and then getting smaller and the head getting denser.
Right, changing colour from purple to green.
Yeah, it's so super. Good. Yeah, it's one that I play every year. I won't get into my whole spiel about what happened with mine in right now, but you know, I played it on release day. Absolutely loved it. Didn't get to play again until a few years later, and actually have the whole copy for myself. Obviously, the one disc got damaged. That's a story for another day. We won't say too long to talk about that now. But thankfully, didn't pay too much more than the actual launch price of it in the end. Nothing like it's worth now. But yeah, it's still one game that I love to play over and over again, mate. Yeah, as you say, the battle system's amazing. The bit that you're saying just now with the enemies, from there you go behind them into like the safe zone and they start throwing up their shields so you can't get them. And then there's those other ones where you can shoot the weak spot, which is like the mother like thing, like, and there's all the other around it. If you shoot the weak spot, which is like the leader or the mother or the queen or whatever it is, you shoot them and they all scatter away and the battle's over. So congratulations, two experience. And if you want more, you've got to take them all out. It's like a work for it, boy.
Aye. Another one, it's like, it looks like a big kind of triangular base, like a big kind of insect style blimp thing, isn't it? It's like, in the weak spot, it's this big kind of red area around at the back, and as you shoot it kind of spurts out gunk kind of thing. Obviously it's like all the enemies are quite kind of like organic looking as well, because what's the other ones as well that you fight later on, and they're kind of like big long jaws, snappy things are just horrible, but they look angry, like big, angry air piranhas.
Yeah, they're disgusting, aren't they? Or a lot of the enemies. You've got the Empire's like mechanical stuff, and then you've got the monsters, and it all ties into the fantastic story, which, you know, the groundwork was laid in the first game. The second game built on it a bit more, and Saga ties it all together, and you know, it references both games. You see flashbacks to both games. Won't give much away. I know we just said that Ares has died, and we're talking about spoilers for 24. You know, Panzer Dragoon Saga isn't as widely available as those games. If you haven't played it yet, make sure you do. The story is actually pretty phenomenal. Not as overtly epic as other games in the series. It's just very clever, and the final twist at the end is French kissed. Absolutely superb.
Right. It's definitely a game that warrants the purchase of an ODE, or if you want to go down the kind of emulation route, you know, Saturn emulation. I think there's been updates on like cores for Mister and stuff like that. They're getting better as well. So these kind of methods, you know, don't be putting $600-700 quid in somebody's pocket, man. Just go and buy yourself a Japanese Saturn or a PAL Saturn with a broken disc drive and stick an ODE in it and enjoy it for a fraction of the price. Because I think it's one of these games that every Sega fan should have a chance to experience Panzer Dragoon Saga. It's that, I think you touched on it, the kind of tragic circumstances around, you know, a couple of the members of Team Andromeda passing away, the kind of crunch that they were under to get it completed. I think their work deserves an audience far greater than what it's been given. And it's just, don't go into it. All I'll say is, don't go into Panzer Dragoon Saga if you play it, thinking this is a rare expensive game. Just went to it with a clean slate. It's another extension of the Panzer Dragoon world, and just let it work its charm. Listen to the mute, listen to Behold the Precious Wings. Just like, just look at the art style. You know, just get involved in the opening, the cutscene, the CGI cutscene. The level of detail is beautiful for the time.
Yeah.
You know, the way that the art style that it's drawn. You know, you've seen the cover for the game. You know, Edge on there. He's represented so perfectly from his CG form on the cover to the cutscene. It's just so well drawn. We've taken the piss out the not that, but you know, it's just just go into it with a don't think about its rarity or its value. Just turn it on and play it and just let it work its magic. Yeah, there's some bits that look a bit kind of ropey in the, like certain areas, maybe a bit of slowdown, but in the main, it's just just enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, the last segment I've got on here was just what makes these games so special. I know we've touched on it a bit, but the obviously we've just been talking about the story and the setting, you know, the influences that drove it, and you know how it's all tied together. It's just very unique. You know, I don't think you get too many in the indie scene. You do get some games that can be kind of comparable, but you don't really get any, you know, kind of post-apocalyptic settings like you see in Panzer Dragoon these days. It was very unique, and even though because it took inspiration from various sources, it's not like, you know, you got your Fallouts, which is obviously a wasteland, but that's very much a parody on, you know, 50s culture. You got your kind of your Mad Max sort of inspired games. Panzer Dragoon really is something in itself. There's nothing out there that's quite like the setting that it gives the player, is there?
No. I mean, excuse me. Panzer Dragoon made dragons fashionable before Khaleesi did. She's shouting Dracarys. We don't need no Dracarys. We just lock on those lasers and just let them fly. It's a special, special series. And again, it goes back to that thing. Another one that there's no reason why Sega can't bring it back themselves. You know, it's... Whether, I don't know, people talk about source code being missing for Saga, and that's why they can't re-release it. But, you know, just re-release it on one of the, like a mini console or something like that. You know, if they ever go down that route, possibly something they could do, emulate it, whether they decide to ever do a mini Saturn. But it's just, there's just so much about it. I mean, the music, the way it sets the scene, the visual style, as you said, the kind of lore around it, the whole universe has been built up around it, but the, you know, the battle in the Empire, and just, you know, I could literally sit and go on about Panzer Dragoon for hours, mate. I just think it's such a gorgeous series that it was Sega coming out with the Saturn and basically going, right, we've got a new IP here, you know, yeah. Boom, you know, we're not going to give you another Sonic at that point. Sonic Extreme was still in the works, it was going to be happening, but you know, you've got your Virtua Fighter, got your Daytona, got your arcade ports. He's a brand new IP doing something completely different, cinematic in terms of, you know, making the most of that CD audio, giving you an orchestral soundtrack. I mean, we don't want to kind of dig a game, we're going to do a more retrospective, but, you know, Yoshitaka Azuma, who did the soundtrack, as I mentioned before, he composed parts of the soundtrack or all of the soundtrack to gameplay footage.
Yeah.
Again, that's something that film does so well. Like, you watch a movie, the music seems to be reacting to what happens on the screen. That's what happens in Panzer Dragoon. The music, at the time, nothing had done that. No game had done that. You were getting music that, and that was all part of the experience. It tied in, that it felt like, you know, what your actions on screen were influencing the music. Just, as you said earlier, chef kiss.
I mean, the soundtrack really does deserve a special mention. You know, you were listening to the Saga soundtrack, Behold Precious Rings. We were talking about the Atom theme earlier, how that plays in the intro. Yeah. Saga has amazing music, orchestral and epic, but sometimes, you know, there's quite a tribal feel to a lot of the themes.
Yeah.
really gives you this feeling of this, you know, this savage, desolate wasteland that they live in, you know, this world that's been ravaged by the generations that lived before, and this quite massive cataclysm that's happened. You've got these tribes and you've got the empire that's kind of imposing its will on everyone, and these raw monsters that are out there just causing absolute havoc. I do like the contrast between Panzer II and the original, where you've got, as you say, the original game, they wrote the soundtrack to the actual gameplay. Mm. So it's just absolutely perfect. Whereas II, because you've got the divergent routes and everything like that, it has to be a lot more reactive, and it's fantastic in its own way. Not quite. It's because it's done via the Saturn zone. It's not done on Red Book Audio like the first game is, so it's not like a full CD soundtrack, but it uses the Saturn's instrumentation, and it's absolutely incredible. And then the visuals as well for all three games. Panzer Dragoon's always been a high watermark for visuals. We talked about Zweier being, you know, levels above what was out there and everything else. And the original Panzer Dragoon was a head turner when people first saw it. I don't think too many people give Saga that it's due for visuals. I've heard people say that it's not great looking. I know it uses the same engine as the first two games, just adapted to make it an RPG.
Yeah,
I think Saga is stunning. Is it disc two where you're in the ruins and is it Uru Ruins, I think, and the time of day changes, so it starts off, and again you've got some transparencies there. You've got this huge watery wasteland out there, you know, all this sort of broken architecture like hanging out of it, this beautiful water that just goes on forever, and there's a bit of clipping because you've got the cliff edge that comes in. But then you go in and you unlock things and you move the scenery about. It is this too, I think. And yeah, and as you move the scenery about and come out, then the time of day shifts, and then you kind of, then it's sunset, and then there's this orange tinge coming through all the windows and everything. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And then you finally get it, and it's like nighttime when you finish it, and then you have this, or again, no spoilers here, but you have this absolutely, you have a boss battle and an amazing cutscene, an absolutely phenomenal cutscene, which I've tried to capture a few pictures on my phone. It just doesn't do it justice. It's one of those ones where, in your mind's eye, it's absolutely incredible, and the effects on show there are outrageous for the Sega Saturn.
I know Saga's got some. I mean, I think Saga lighting effect wise eclipses the first two games. I think what it does with lighting, I mean, the campsite alone when you save, you know, the fire you've got, it sounds daft, but if the glow that comes off that is just, it actually feels warm.
Yeah.
But you know yourself, and if you go to the kind of settlements, and if you arrive at too early to speak to someone, and you go to the gate and you put the reticle on it and you press a button that says leave or wait till morning, or you can wait till night time, if you arrive too early, whatever. But again, you mentioned that sunset glow, like. The actual villages totally change their appearance based on the time of day, the lighting. Like if you get it really early in the morning, you get that kind of lovely kind of sunrise. It's overly bright, quite saturated. But as the time moves on, obviously it gets kind of more normalised, then it gets into dark, you know, nighttime, kind of dusk and dawn and things like that. And the lighting just changes. It changes the whole mood of, like, places you visit.
Yeah.
And I know people kind of look at the character model for Edge whenever you're doing exploration on foot. Yeah. And he's a bit blocky. And he's running animations a wee bit kind of odd looking. But that, to me, adds to a lot of the charm. The village areas, like, you know yourself, as one of the village areas you go to, because you're getting the parts, and you kind of run through that ice tunnel you run through.
Yeah.
Yourself, you go up to the left, up the stairs, across, down and then round, and that lovely ice, and there's a wee bit of slowdown in that ice cavern every time you run through it. But again, depending on the time of day, because of the kind of light that's coming through the tunnel, it changes tint.
Yeah.
And it just adds to it. Just, it's so atmospheric. It's just
so good. You get that, because I was thinking that you go into the campsite with the The guy goes, oh, the pendant you have there. If you go there at night, you know, it's just a guy and he's got a shelf full of stuff. You go there during the, if you go there at the chat, he's got a lot of stuff. You go there at night, he's got his lantern on and the stuff in his shelf is glowing. It's like there's something in there that's bright green. And then, yeah, like when you run through that tunnel, it's like the northern lights in there at the evening. And you go through and you go around to that guy who's got the drinks in the bar and he's kind of in that swiveling chair. And everything's glowing in. Oh, it's so magical. God, I'm going to want to play all three of these back to back now, aren't I?
I know. I'm just going to probably play Zvi whenever we finish.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, while we love it, hopefully that's coming across. Obviously, the series didn't stop. We're just focusing on the Sega Saturn games for today.
Yep.
Obviously, we had a few extras. We had Panzer Dragoon Mini on the Game Gear. Which, you know, if you thought Saga was the most expensive game that you can buy in this series, Mini is even more expensive.
Yeah, go look that one up and give yourselves a fright, folks.
Yeah, and it's not an especially good game. Obviously, you haven't got the rotation. It's just it's like a space harrier with a dragon. You know, it's full on focused. Not great. Water, though. Phenomenal game on the Xbox.
Yep.
Love Auto. Backwards compatible with Xbox One and Xbox Series consoles, which is brilliant because that actually has the original game in there, a special port of the original game that's unlockable in there.
That's Pandora's Box, isn't it?
Yeah. But Auto was, you know, it didn't feature, it wasn't made by Futasugi. It was someone else headed this one up, but it's still very special. I don't think it quite captures the magic of the original games. It kind of feels like its own thing. It's kind of got its own identity. And it adds a bit of complexity in the acceleration and deceleration as well.
Aye. It's a good game. I remember whenever it got its Xbox One X enhanced patch to make it, you know, proper, you know, ramps up to 4K and whatnot. But and that's carried over onto Series X as well. It's part of the same universe, but feels like a very different game.
Yeah.
Still like a great game and well worth playing, don't get me wrong. Doesn't go for kind of thing, it's about 18, 20 quid or something to buy it physically. It's not expensive at all.
I'll tell you what is expensive.
What?
Have you seen the Japanese special edition console?
No. Panzer Dragoon Xbox?
Yeah.
I've seen it, but how much does it go for?
Goes for at least £500, that one.
Aye. It's a white one with the purple logo, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yep. Aye, crazy. Crazy, crazy money. But aye, it's a stunning console. That one, aye. I'm sure there's a guy on X. It's an Xbox collector, and he's got loads of different... He's got the Mountain Dew one and various Halo ones. I'm sure he's posted that he's got that one as well. So, aye. That doesn't surprise me, it was for half money.
Yeah, so Auto's great. There was the remake, which I did enjoy. It's not a replacement for the first game because it, for me, the remake just kind of removed a lot of the kind of loneliness, the desolation.
Yeah.
Felt like a completely different game, but still a good one with the original art, especially after the patches. Originally, before the patches, the game was a little bit ropey. The targeting was off, but it feels a lot better to play now. Do have it on Xbox. I originally got it on the Switch through Limited Run Games. I've got it on Xbox. I got it £40 for Limited Run Games to get the cartridge when that came out. But I didn't even get it on release. They did. It wasn't until the third patch that I got the cartridge. It was like months later, which was frustrating. But meant that I had a better version of the game in physical form. But then I got the Xbox version. Xbox version. I paid £2.34. It was a 90% off sale.
I wasn't far off that either, by the way. That's it. I think that's one of the problems with the remake. It's too busy.
Yeah.
It tries to overdo it, kind of killing you with detail. It's like, it as you said, it didn't need that much. You just taking the first game as it stood and just ramped it up to modern standards, that'd have been fine, but just threw too much in. Even though it follows the exact same path, I still found myself getting quite confused by it. Even I should know what's coming.
Yeah,
it's a lot often enough.
I found it a lot easier than the original game. I think it's a lot more forgiving in terms of kind of targeting and movement. But yeah, it was so busy. It's like the first game you got me, it's just like this sunken ruins. It's just ocean as far as the eye can see, and just a few like bit of jagged broken scenery in the foreground. But then in the remake, it's like these huge mountains sitting up there. There's a tree over here. There's like all this stuff up in the distance, which, you know, very nice, very visually impressive. But that's not Panzer Dragoon.
No, that's that just totally takes away from what made the game what it was. The setting is part of the allure of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last game I thought we'd briefly touch on. Did actually get produced by Yukio Futatsugi. I have not actually played this one. It got savaged in reviews for some reason. But that is Crimson Dragon. Do you remember this?
I remember. I've not played it.
So that was a launch game for Xbox One. I can't remember. It was supposed to use Kinect. I can't remember if it did in the end. That was kind of, I remember seeing a little bit of footage for it. I've never actually picked it up, and I can't remember if it's digital only. I would like to play it one day. But yeah, it was Futatsugi himself that actually headed this one up and said that if it was successful, he'd like to work on an RPG version of it. Lo and behold, Xbox One launch was 10 years ago now. And sadly,
not going to happen.
No, sadly not. But interesting to see that he's still got the passion for that sort of series. Unfortunately, he's just making mobile games now.
The waste, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Obviously, an extremely talented guy. So not sure what happened with Crimson Dragon, but I'd like to play it one day, see what's about. It looked a bit... I remember seeing a bit of it, and it looked a bit too westernized for me. It didn't have quite the mystique. You were going around, and you had some sort of commander telling... It was like a tutorial... bit that I saw, and it's like, no, now swoop in and take the enemy from the rear, and you're saying, not really, no.
No, you're not meant to be told that. That was a great thing about Panzer Dragoon. It just didn't hold your hand, it just let you go.
Yeah.
Again, you were instantly in control.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the magic behind it, isn't it? It's the there's always this bond between the rider and the dragon. You know, whether it's Lundy and Laggy in Panzer Dragoon Svi, you know, he finds this mutant Coolia, and then they kind of bond over time. But then in the original Panzer Dragoon and Saga, you sort of had this moment where they kind of come within touching distance, and then they have like this transfer of melding of their memories or consciousness, right. Over, and all of a sudden it's like you're a killing machine on the back of a dragon.
Unlimited power.
But yeah, there's this whole magic and mysticism to the game, mate, which I think rounds it all off. And for me, it kind of is the embodiment of the Saturn itself in that respect. Something misunderstood, but full of mystery, lots of unknowns, just kind of never to be replicated. Just a very special series, a very special moment in time.
Right, definitely a product of its time, mate. And maybe the advancements in technology to bring it back, as we'll see with the remake, might not be a good thing unless people are going to actually do it the justice. But you mentioned about Crimson Dragon being too westernised. You know, I think gaming is very westernised now. I think we've lost, and that's one of the things I'd kind of touched on X as well. I miss Japan being the epicentre of gaming. I miss all the innovation coming out of Japan. I miss, in a way, the import scene. I know we don't need to wait a year anymore for things to come out, but I just think there's just something special about whenever... The way the Japanese view games, it's just so creative. I think if they tried to do a Panzer Dragoon just now, you know, whoever took it on, it just, as you've seen with the remake, it loses a little bit of its kind of soul a wee bit.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with Team Andromeda having the kind of legacy and the history that they've got with these games, I think that they're very much the embodiment of them. They're a testament to them, you know, the work that they've done, the people involved, the people that were sadly, you know, lost during production of Saga. So they are a fitting tribute to a once brilliant creative team.
Yeah, No, perfectly put, mate. Perfectly put. I think that's a great place to leave it. That's a truly magical series that we'd love to see come back, but sadly, I don't think we'll ever see it replicated exactly as it was on the hardware and the time that it was in. It was truly a special moment. So, mate, it's been an absolute blast talking through this with you. It's been an absolute pleasure as always. We'll throw it over to our viewers and our listeners, those of you in the comments, in the live chat, those of you on the Radio Sega Discord. Let us know what your thoughts, feelings are for Panzer Dragoon. Where did you first encounter the series? What's your favorite entry? Does it hold the same place in your heart as it seems to do for us? Please let us know. Get in touch. You can talk to us via the Radio Sega Discord, via the comments below, or get in touch with us on X. Still going to call it Twitter. You can get in touch with us via Twitter. You can find me at Swooper_D. You can find James at the Segaholic. You can find the account at Sega Guys. Until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Cheers, guys.
Sega.